Oh, hey, what's
Hey,
up?
Kurt, how's it going?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good. It's so cool to finally be able to talk to you.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, just to let everyone know that I did in the advertisement. You're known. I know you from Facebook. You're very well known for your memes. You're also a stand-up, but I just remember when I friended you. Like that's what I found out, and I was just like, "Oh, this is so cool." We're started like right away, just to let you know.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, I just wanted to ask you a little bit. How did the meme thing start?
I don't know. I think I was just like a lot of people just bored on Facebook, so I just started doing that, and then I met a whole bunch of people that do that, Mike Fellows.
Yeah.
And he's like someone who really inspired me and helped me want to be a part of doing that, you know.
Yeah, he's got a, he I'm friends with him too, and he's like, I think I friended him after you, and he's such a like the same way. What's really cool about it is like you like people need to understand like you make your own. Like that's a very unique thing
Yeah.
because a lot of people don't. A lot of people will just share them and you know they just, you know, it's
I'll
not
be
really
honest.
original.
I'll be honest. When I first started, a lot of them were reposts, and some still are, but a lot are original too. So I try to have a balance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
A
I
lot
think
of
also what's good about it is you have interests. So like they're like curated in that point of view, like they have your different things that you're into, which is so great because like there are similar things that I'm into. Like I also like wrestling, I also like pop punk. So it's like it's interesting to see like similar things, and also like you have your, you know, your cum jokes and stuff. So it's always very good. It's I guess we can just get right into it. You're on the autism spectrum, right? Yeah, me too. But like I always feel so weird about it because like I'm sure I've been diagnosed, but it's like I always feel like explaining it. I always feel like I'm like in autism blackface or whatever. Like when I explain it, like I don't know, like if I have it as bad as others do, if you know what I mean.
I grew up in a dysfunctional family where we don't use the proper terms. So when I describe my autism, I even offend other autistic people because of the way I talk about it. Because I don't know all the politically correct or polite
Right.
terms to
Yeah.
use for it, because it's such a different thing now than when I was growing up with it, that I could just say, I don't mean to be offensive, but the way I describe it could still come across that way or something.
Right, for sure. And you know, I don't think I'm that much younger than you. I think I'm younger than you. How old are you?
I'm 28.
Oh, okay. So I just turned 27, so that's not. I thought you were 30, so that's good. Yeah, it's interesting, like how things have sort of changed in that regard. Like to me, like I was always in special ed and stuff, and like to me, it just it's so it's such an interesting thing with that in comedy. Like so many people sort of are on the spectrum or have it, and like you know, it's kind of weird. Like when you explain it, like you might think, like people might think, oh, it's like an only. Like you're only a few people that have it, but like it's frustrating because, and the thing that's frustrating to me is like how people can sort of like define it. It's like we're all weird. I think people are all crazy, and you know, I think it's very weird for people to like assume that they're normal or have some type of like, oh, these people are normal and these people aren't. That always annoyed me.
Autism's really mainstream now, where I always, after I do a set or something, somebody will come up to me and want to know if they're on the autism spectrum. Like, everyone just thinks they have
Right.
autism now of some sort.
Yeah, I think it's because people are just so like I think it's really I think in a negative way, the one negative thing about it is it's made everyone unsure of themselves socially.
Oh, and it's like,
I feel like, you know, I definitely think it's a real thing. I definitely think, you know, it is a real thing. I know it is a real thing, but like, to me, it just seems so, I never liked the way it was treated or addressed or any way at all. Because it just makes people feel left out.
Yeah, and plus, I don't know, like, another thing, too, is how it's, like, sometimes portrayed on, like, TV shows or movies or something. I like Sheldon Cooper. Like, I'm one of the few rare autistic people who isn't, like, at all offended by that character.
Right.
But a lot of autistic people just, like, think he's a caricature of autism, but it's like he's on a Chuck Lorre sitcom. He's gonna be a caricature, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think it's also like with the way that is, I think it's so hard, especially with acting. Like, actors really impressed me a whole lot with being able to do that, but I think autism is one of the few things that like you'll never really be able to really portray accurately. Because it's so different for so many different people, and so many people have different things that they have and different eccentricities. And it's like, you know, I hear a lot of people, like, they just say, oh, I don't have that, so it doesn't represent me. It's like,
yeah.
But I think what's cool is to have, you know, people like you and Keith Reiser, like, to know, like, that there's someone out there that can at least speak for you in a positive way. If you know what I mean, or at least
in a relatable way. I get what you're saying, but I think even more important than positive is being honest, because like I know some of my jokes about autism aren't going to connect with everybody who has autism, but like it's truthful to me, so I still have to talk about it, and hopefully even if you don't relate to it, you can be like, oh, well, that's true to him, and he's just being funny about something that's true to him. So it's a rough balance. Like, I don't want to be negative about it, but at the same time, I don't want to, like, talk about something that isn't true to me because it's not positive. You know what I mean?
Right, for sure. I think it's, I just think it's really cool to have that sort of thing, that you sort of embrace it in a good way. Like, I think that's a good thing to do. Especially with comedy, it's just like, you know, that's the hardest thing, is it's always about just, unless you're playing a rare character, like, it's, stand-up is the most, like, sensitive type of expression of yourself that you can do, so.
Yeah.
To be able to do that, it's really a good thing to be able to do.
Yeah, I think, like, what makes stand-up, like, and a lot of people, if you watch their act, they don't like to get too personal, because, like, if you get personal and bomb, it's the worst feeling in the world, where you're like, I bared my soul to get laughs, and I didn't get any fucking laughs. And it's just...
Right, exactly.
It's so painful. That's, like, why... if you're like, why doesn't that comic talk about who they really are? I think a lot of it is, like, fear, you know?
Right.
And some people are just like, they just want to tell goofy jokes, and that's cool too. But I think to try to like actually talk about things that are important to you in your life and try to make them funny. And I think because like you don't want to be like, there's a lot of things with my autism that's just painful to me. So like, one thing I never want to do is I never want it to seem like I'm being serious or doing like a one-man show type pain about autism. It has to be truthful, but it also has to be, at the end of the day, funny.
Yeah, that's one of the, like, that's one of the things that I think is so hard about comedy now, is people have such like a distinction for it now, which is very hard. Like, people just have, like, what they define as comedy and what they define as, like, what you said, like, a one-man show type of thing. I think it's very... I think if you're doing comedy, it should be, you know, accepted. Like, you know, if that's what you say you're doing it. And
yeah.
It's... It's very cool. So you you're based in Maryland, right?
Yeah.
When did you start doing comedy?
I started in the summer of 2014.
Oh, okay. So I started in July of 2015. So I figured it was around that same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see, like, how far, like, you just go. Like, how it always evolves and expands. And especially now, I feel so bad for people who are getting into comedy now.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've been sort of in this, like, heyday of, like, just especially where I am, like, coming up on this great scene. And it's, like, I feel so bad for people, like, starting now.
Yeah. And yeah. It's hard. Even being like just a couple years in, because before the lockdown started, I was starting to do like more feature sets, like 20 minutes.
Right.
And like, that's so valuable. And this last set I just did was a feature set. So like, and I hadn't done in such a long time. So to have my first set back be a 20 minute set, it just was like, I felt like I had a good set, but I still felt like so rusty because, right. You know, I haven't been able to like do it. And Zoom shows are not, they don't prepare you for when stand-up's going to come back. I'm sorry. You're just like,
no.
You're just talking to four other comics in their living room. A lot of,
I have a joke about it. I feel like being like performing on Zoom to me is a lot like what I imagine, like I always would imagine, like with stand up, it's very similar to like a stripper of like, if you do a certain move, you realize you get to keep that move in your set by the money you make. Well, with us, we get laughs. So like,
yeah,
you get a joke, like, okay, that joke got a small laugh. I'm not going to keep that joke in.
Yeah.
That joke got a big laugh. I'm going to keep that joke in. When you don't have that sort of distinction, to me, it just feels like whenever I'm on TikTok or on Instagram, just vlogging, like it doesn't feel like I'm actually getting anything, because to me I need that output or that input of like, okay, joke, laugh, and then I can keep that in my set.
I
think people are like trying to get around on it, and I understand why.
Yeah,
because people are just trying to get like whatever performing they can.
Zoom is like, it just I don't know, it's like most of the time delay on it, even if you get a laugh, it like,
right.
It comes in like 6 seconds after you set the punchline, and then by that point you're already on a new bit and it's completely fucked up your timing. So it's like, it just,
yeah, for sure,
it's just like, yeah. And you know, I did like two of them when this whole thing first started, and then I didn't do like any more after that. And then
yeah, me too.
I did a couple of live shows, a little bit during this, but like certainly not enough to know like true development. You know what I mean? So it's like, it just,
right.
It's just interesting, you know. And I feel like now when you do a live show, you're just happy to be doing a live show. It could be the worst set ever, and you'll still be kind of happy that you got to fucking do live stand up anyway. You know what I mean?
For sure. Like I haven't been able, I've been doing stand up with my open mic that I have on Mondays came back like pretty early on. So that came back after like 3 months of being away. And we were outside for a little bit, now we're back inside, and it's fine. And like, we've had a couple shows. Like the last show I did was a Valentine's Day show, which I just did like, I did stand up, but it was like opening mostly for musical acts, so it was like weird. But
yeah,
between that, I've just been doing these roast battle mics, roast battle shows, and they're just like, to me, it's not my forte, really.
Oh, yeah.
To do roast battle stuff. But it's like, I just had to do something.
Yeah. Roast battles are interesting because I feel like if your opponent doesn't have as sad of a life as you do, it's really difficult. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
I share all my information. I'm like special ed, autism, couldn't tie my shoes until I was in ninth grade. And then, like, I have some, like, good-looking guy who's just like, I don't know, I cried. And then you're just like, oh, yeah. So
right.
It's just really, but it's hard to roast somebody who, like, looks like an Abercrombie and Fitch ad. And you're just like,
yeah, for sure.
You're going to just ridicule them for being handsome. It's just not, it's not going to hurt their feelings. You know what I mean? So it's like,
when I did when I won the past two that I was in, and I couldn't believe that I won the last one, because like, I had no idea. Like, people told me afterwards, like, oh, you can talk to the person that you're roasting and like get to know them. And it's like, to me, it was so hard. So to me, I just, the way I ended up getting it to work was I just ended up saying he was boring. So, like, the entire set, I just acted like he was completely, like, yeah, you know, not interesting to me. And I was like, how am I supposed to write jokes when this guy's boring?
Yeah.
It's really interesting you bring something up, because I get, this is a major thing about me, too, is you said that you didn't learn to tie your shoes until you were 9?
Or, like, 9th grade, which is, I'm kind of joking a little bit, but it did take me a long ass time before I could tie my shoes. That's for sure.
No, the reason I can tell you that is because I can't tie my shoes. I wear Velcro and I wear shoes without laces.
Yeah.
They tried to teach me from 8 years old to 18. And I just, you know, I was like, I'm not getting this. And it's the same thing with like anything else, like tying a tie, anything else. So it's sort of become like a signature look part of the deal. Like, people are like, oh, there's Richard Woods. She's like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, for me, it's like, it's a motor skill thing where it's just like,
yeah, exactly. And it's always, that's just like a terrible thing. People don't understand that. Like, when you have those issues,
yeah,
it's like, no, they tried to teach me. Like, I had like a teacher that actually tried to teach me for years, for like 7 years. And it's like, no, we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah. I had to use a key locker, in school, because I just couldn't do the combination lock.
Oh, really?
So,
I didn't have a problem with that. That's surprising, but yeah.
Yeah, so like, I'd have to go to the office every day, get a key, and then it was just me and like 4 other kids with Down syndrome at our lockers, and like middle school was a nightmare because a lot of that, because you just like get real hard on yourself because
oh yeah, for sure.
It's like, I'm not to say like I'm different from the Down syndrome kids, but like it's because if you look at me, you would, like, if you look at someone with Down syndrome, you know they have Down syndrome. You know what I mean? But like,
right,
if you look at someone with autism, you wouldn't know necessarily. So like, right, when you're just like, you feel like, you even feel like an outsider to like the Down syndrome kids, because like, you're like, I'm too like weird and disabled for the normal kids, and then I'm not disabled enough for the disabled kids. So then it,
and for them, what's always so interesting is like, I was in special ed, of course, and it always felt like you were always so much more protective of that person, because at least you could stand up for yourself. At least, because a good thing and a negative thing is like, a lot of comedians say is that like, they're very happy most of the time, people with Down syndrome, because they aren't aware of the outside thing. I think the hard thing with being autistic or being on the spectrum like I am, it's like,
yeah, you know you're different.
People are talking.
Yeah,
you know people,
you know,
are talking.
You're aware of your differences. Like, I'm not always able to know like what I've done wrong socially, but I know I've done something wrong socially. So it's just a thing where it's like, you're not aware, but you're also hyper aware at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a weird feeling.
Yeah. I always relate to that. You know how John Mulaney has that joke, I think it's in his first special, of how like, he doesn't drink anymore, so he doesn't have like the excuse.
Oh,
of, like, it's the same thing for me. It's like,
yeah,
it's like, I don't drink. It's just like, oh, I said something. Oh, I did something.
Yeah, you just start to realize it wasn't the alcohol. You just have like,
right. It's like, I don't drink alcohol.
You just have a bad personality trait.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's so cool to be able to, like, actually, it's so reassuring to be able to talk about this with someone, because it's like, yeah, you know, it's having that sort of thing. And with you, have you, you said that you were doing feature work. I saw that. Who did you feature for last? I thought that it was
Dan St. Germain.
Right.
How was that? It's awesome. He's a really good guy. He, like, helps me out a lot. Yeah, he's very awesome.
That's so cool. Like, that's always been cool to me to see, like, people working with, you know, higher up comedians.
Yeah, he's so funny. I think he's very underrated, actually.
For sure. He's one of those guys that's like, you know, if you're, that's one thing that I love about doing stand up is just I listen to a lot of my stand up through like the comedy that I like through Spotify, because you can just find out, like, oh, this comedian's like the biggest comedian in Idaho. And then that's how I found out, like, about Dan St. Germain. And then it's like, it's just so cool, like, to see him. And
he reminds me a lot of, like, when Patton Oswalt, like, his early work, like early Patton Oswalt.
Yeah,
a lot of, like, for sure. Lot of character, like, act outs and stuff, but it's and I think that's the hardest comedy to do, because, like, when you're bombing doing an act out, it's like, it's way harder than, like, if you just talk every time you do a set. Like, I don't really do that many act outs, so, like, when I'm bombing, it's like, I could just stay in the same tone, like, but if you're bombing right before you have to go into an act out, you still have to do that act out while bombing, and that just looks so, like, painful.
Right. Yeah, it is. To me, like, I always want to do more stuff, like, I should move around more, and the thing to me that's, like, I don't know if you have this, I've only seen a little bit of your stand-up, because you have a little bit online, like, you're very, and it's good, because it's probably good, because you can save a lot of stuff. Yeah. For when people see you. But, like, to me, what just goes back with, like, my verbal and, like, sticks, like, to me, it's like, I can't control anything, you know? Like, to me, I'm always touching myself or, like, adjusting. And it's so weird, because it's not, like, on purpose. Like, a lot of people think, oh, he's, like, playing a character or something. It's like, no, this is the way I've been since I was 5 years old.
I struggle with the stage presence part of stand up because I just, like, you know, I feel uncomfortable up there sometimes, and I'll just do things like with the microphone that probably just looks odd, but, like,
to me
I think because I talk about having autism, like, people don't really, it's, people accept it more, but like if you do things like that look weird in front of people and you don't have autism, it's hard to do a set where, you know, people are like, he looks uncomfortable or something. And then, like, they're trying to figure out if you have something wrong with you or something. Right. So they're not really even listening to your jokes.
Right.
So it can be a whole fiasco if you don't handle it right way.
Yeah. One joke I did that always worked when I did, like, I only did them a little bit because they're terrible. When I did Bringer shows in New York, like, the one joke that always worked really well was, like, I would say, I'm very awkward with the microphone. I've been doing this for, like, 3 years at the time. And it's, like, I've been doing this for, like, a year. I did improv and stuff. And, like, but the way I explain it is, the mic stand is like a pretty girl. I just don't know how to exist around it.
Oh, yeah.
So that always works really well. But, like, to me, it's always just remembering everything and getting, do you have problems with, like, memorizing your act? Like,
no, that's honestly, I think that's the only part I'm, like, comfortable with is, like, knowing, like, I know every joke I do. I never really have any, problems, with it at all. So, like, that's the only thing where I'm like, all right, at least I have that down. I can memorize my act, you know?
Right.
It's because I used to act in, like, plays and stuff. So, like, I used to have to, like, memorize a whole bunch of lines. So, like, I don't really have any problem doing that. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How did you get involved in that? Was that, like,
was it when you were little? Yeah, I just did it, like, in school, you know, it's just something to do. And honestly, I think that's what, like, kind of, like, got me interest. I mean, you learn a lot about performing by doing that. But, like, sometimes I'd do a part and I would get laughs. So then I was like, oh, that feels good, you know. It's not doing stand-up, but, you know, it definitely, I think if I didn't do that, it, you know, that kind of gets you comfortable on stage a little bit. But
right.
stand-up's a whole different thing because you're up there by yourself. So yeah. It's just, you know, so it's just different.
I've talked about that a lot recently on the podcast. It's just like with the different things that I've done on stage. It's like stand-up is so different and each thing is so different. Like when I sang in high school, that was different. And that was good because I was able to learn how to like memorize lyrics and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I did improv for way too long, which was just learning. I have this joke and it hasn't worked yet, but I did it for like 6-7 years. And I always feel like even though I had good time, like short form, like the improv that I did would be a good like thing to give out to someone who like committed a misdemeanor. Like a kid gets caught like shoplifting. It's like, it's just improv.
Yeah.
But for me, like that was different because I had so many cool people just that were so experienced to fall back on. And then with stand up, it's like, okay, I'm up here by myself. I got to figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
And it's been really cool to like learn how to go through everything. And it's just so interesting with that. So with your so what's your like, it feels funny asking this. What's your like act like now? Like what kind of stuff have you been talking, do you talk about like the pandemic and stuff when you're on stage or do you just like
I do maybe like one joke about it now. It's not really so much about it is about the pandemic. It's about like like how people think there's a chip in it, like the vaccine. People that are concerned about that. So I have a joke sort of making fun of that. But for the most part, I haven't done stand up a whole lot. So like I'm just and my first set back, I definitely just relied on jokes I've been doing. So, like, a lot of it's self-deprecating autism jokes. Like, that's mainly, like, my bread and butter, I guess.
Right. Oh, that's interesting to talk about. I love doing self-deprecating humor.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to do because, and I wonder if you have the same thing, is, like, if you're liked by a lot of people, especially at the venue or like wherever you perform, it's very hard nowadays to do it.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I think self-deprecating, I don't know if this is the same for you, but I think especially nowadays with how like people are very, they view self-love and stuff like that as very important. And it is.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I'm joking about myself, I have the power. I'm in control.
Yeah.
Like I'm not getting down on myself. It's not like, and I have to be careful too. It's like, you don't want to sound like sad or self-pitying.
Yeah.
It's like, no, these things are silly.
Yeah.
I always say to me, it's like, I have to, like, I make fun of like different people in my act. So like, I make fun of Kanye West. The elephant in the room has to acknowledge I'm an elephant in the room before it can make fun of anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I can't make fun of Kanye if I don't, it's like this stuff about me.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think like for me, it's just like, and you said you were in special ed. I feel like to survive like that part of my life, I had to learn how to make fun of myself. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So like that's just like implanted in me. But like, you're right. It's about a balance because sometimes it can be too sad or whatever, so you just have to find like the balance with it. But like, to me, sometimes the problem with certain comics is they like shit on everything, but it doesn't always work because they didn't, like, once you've shat on yourself for, like, a couple of minutes, you can talk about literally anything you want after that for the most part, and people will be cool with it, and you won't look like a dick because they're like,
right.
Look at what he said about himself, you know what I mean?
Right. That was one of my biggest, like, issues with, like, Ricky Gervais a whole lot of times with him. Yeah. It's like, I feel like if he just did, like, self-deprecating humor a little bit, it would just be, like, easier for him to be more likable.
Yeah.
But it's like, to me, it's like, I like that mix. I like when people can make fun of themselves and can, you know.
You know, it's always weird, and it's kind of funny, but it's, like, kind of awkward. It's like, you can tell when a comedian is just trying to self-deprecate, like when a good-looking comic tries to self-deprecate, it always feels kind of awkward.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're like, what? You look like... I don't think it's harder if you don't... If, like, you look that way to try to do it. Like, someone like me, I could just easily... It looks like I'm being an everyman. You know what I mean? People are like, I like this fucking guy. I gotta have a drink with him. Well, that is true. His head is kind of fucking large. You know what I mean? Where if you're good looking and try to do it, people like will still think you're an asshole, regardless of if you self-deprecate or not. So it's like, I kind of feel bad for them sometimes. Like when a good looking comedian, they're like, I'm gonna try to be more likable. I'm gonna shit on myself. And then people are still like, yeah, I still don't like you.
Right. Yeah, so you mentioned a few people, but who are your like favorite comedians? Who are the guys that like influence you?
I know it's probably hacky to say it at this point, but Patrice O'Neill is a big one.
Oh, really? That's surprising to me. To me, I like him like way more than I think I would. Just like he's a person that I like after I did stand up, if you know what I mean. Like before I did stand up, I used to not hate, but like, I guess I didn't get Maria Bamford, and then I started doing stand up, and I was like, oh, she's a fucking genius.
For me, I grew up like listening to like Opie and Anthony and stuff. Like, I was it's funny because like in elementary school, like I would watch Tough Crowd before I knew who any of those people were. So like that was kind of like, so I saw like it early. I saw like Greg Giraldo and like Jim Norton and like Patrice O'Neill and like Nick DiPaolo and all that stuff like early. So like by the time I was in high school, I was like a big Opie and Anthony guy or a big like Howard Stern guy, like during the Artie Lang years. So, like, that, I guess cringe comedy is, like, what I grew up, like, loving a lot of. And then, like, also, I'm a big Norm Macdonald fan. His Weekend Update, like, when he did that stuff on Saturday Night Live and, like, the movie Dirty Work and just, like, his stand-up. Like, one thing I love about Norm Macdonald is I feel like he invented, like, trolling people.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He did. One of my favorite things about him, I don't know if you ever saw it. Did you ever see the Larry King interview that he
did?
Where he just completely trolled him the entire time. He like pretended he came out as gay and like stuff like that. Yeah. It was just like...
I remember...
It was the most funniest thing because usually Larry has like a good sense of humor about himself. That. But he was like in interview mode, so he took everything that he said seriously.
I remember The View, he wouldn't stop calling Hillary Clinton a murderer or like Bill Clinton a murderer. And then like the host was so mad. And then he was like, all right, manslaughter. And then, it's just like for me, like that's just funny. And I think people like because Norm, he'll do stuff like that. I think people like try to like think it's a political thing, but it's like, no, he's doing that because it's funny. So like,
yeah, that's what I realized. Like with him, I thought about that too a little bit, but to me, I just realized with him, that's his sense of humor. That's what he does. And he's very good at it. And I think that's a hard thing nowadays, is like to have someone that just is funny like that. And like, to me, I just have that distinction. Yeah. Like, I know you have to sort of know the person. To me, I always feel like, you know, what's so hard to me now is, with comedy, I view it a lot like, you know how, like, we have Netflix now and everything, and people are used to comedy now. Like, people who didn't watch stand-up are getting used to watching stand-up. I feel like a lot of people who are new to watching comedy are people, are the same people who, like, it, who, like, don't know that wrestling is fake. It's like, oh, that guy just hit that person with a chair. You shouldn't do that in society.
Yeah.
It's like, no. That's part of the thing. It's like, you know, as long, I think as long as it's on stage, you can know for sure it's a performance.
People like, it's hard because everyone wants to throw everything into a political category now. So if you're a comedian and you do a certain kind of bit, people think that that's your view on everything, where it's like, no, maybe that's just a joke, like, and that's just how they feel when they're telling a joke. Right. Or maybe it's not how they feel and they're just telling a joke. So it's like, you know, it's, I think, like, a comedian, like, a good example is, like, Bill Burr. Like Bill Burr, believe, is completely liberal, but, like, he, the way he does comedy is just, like, offended at it because it's just he's abrasive, like he's gonna be abrasive, so it's just but like I try to, like, when I'm watching stand-up, like, I don't really give a shit what the person's political view is. If they make me laugh, they make me laugh. But like, it's hard to have that point of view sometimes because people will just say it's from like a privileged point of view, which I understand to some degree, but I'm like, as long as something's funny, like, a comedian's job is to be funny. And in a lot of ways, isn't it hard to make the opinions you have that are difficult to swallow? Like, isn't our job to try to make those things funny? So, like, you're getting mad at a comedian for doing their job. Oh, it just seems weird to me.
Yeah, for sure. That's a big thing to me. The big thing to me is, like, I think the one thing that also is wrote it is there are people, like, very few people who do go into stand-up for the wrong reasons, and I feel like they always ruin it for the rest of the people who are just doing it to be funny. You know, like, to me, like, there's a difference between someone, to me, like Mark Norman, he loves trolling, but you can tell that he loves performing and making people laugh. He's not doing it to be a dick.
That's, like, the thing. It's, like, it's just all about your intent, and then it's, like, you know, it's all about how you execute the joke, you know? So,
it's always the, that's a big thing to me. It's always, like, I never, like, sometimes I like having that edge of, like, when you offend someone, but most of the time I don't. Like, to me, what's funny is when I did those burner shows in New York, what was interesting was I did a lot of, like, since I'm an atheist, I did a lot of religion jokes. And the 20, 30-year-olds would love it. But, like, the 80-year-old, like, women would really dislike it. And it'd be like, I never want to hurt anyone's feelings. But I'd be like, to me, it was always like, you know, I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm saying just look at everything as, like, it's absurd. Like, you have to acknowledge that. Like, I'm not saying, like, you're stupid for believing it or anything. That's not what I mean. It's just, you know. But to me, it's always a hard thing because, like, people just, you know, to me, that's always been my thing. It's just never, I always say, like, I always point out things that are, you know, absurd or so good to me, but just because they are doesn't make you stupid or, you know, unintelligent for.
Yeah, bringer shows are interesting anyway. Because. Interesting.
I love that they got pretty much recapped and, like, taken out by COVID. Like, that's one of my favorite things that happened is, like, that those guys just, like, because, and it felt a little bit bad because, like, a small sliver of these people that do them are, they work with the comedy club and they're, like, fine people. Like, that's what they do. They're, you know, they bring in people. They're, you know, but for the most part, people just do it because
it's like a scam. The thing is, like, that always, like, was so depressing is when people would bomb at a bringer show, and it's like you're bombing in front of your friends and your family. Like, if there's a sign you should quit comedy, right, these are people that already fucking know you and like you, and they're not even fucking laughing. So, right. Yeah, like,
you know,
I think it's like it's a good test, you know, where it's like, yeah, if you can't even kill at a bringer show, you should quit comedy.
Right. I remember there was this podcast that they had that was like comedy history. I forget the name of it, but Dimitri Martin was on it, and he was talking about bringer shows, and he was talking about how terrible they were. And then he was like, I ran into Seinfeld one time, and he was like, he did bringer shows, and he hated doing them too. And it's like, you know, it's existed forever.
Yeah, it's just, you know, something that, if you're getting into stand-up, you're going to do bringer shows at some point. Sometimes you don't even know until you're there, but you're on a bringer show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh.
What's amazing is one in New York. Like, it was like Greenwich Village Comedy Club or
Oh, yeah, that was the last
one. And
that was the last.
The thing is, it was a bringer show, but there was, like, these amazing New York comedians just dropped in and did sets. And it was, like, so you got to, like, that was one of the few bringer shows where it's not a complete disaster the whole time, because you're watching people who are actually good perform. You know what I mean?
Yeah. To me, it was always a, like, justification. Like, the way I justified it was, you know, because all my comedian friends would get on me for doing it. It was like, well, I'm on stage with an audience. That's the one thing that I want. And if it's – and my main thing is, like, is whatever comedian does. Like, I have to work on this material. So, like, it was cool to be able to have, like, okay, I can do this material for, you know – whether it's 3 weeks or 3 months until the bringer show, and then do it at the show and be like, okay, this is cool. And then what's cool about it was, like, if I could go back there, it was like kind of like a clean slate almost of, like, you know, if you don't see people again that know you, like a new audience, you can just keep doing new material. It's like the thing that really stunk about COVID happening was, like, I was starting to do all these mics and all this stuff was coming, like, full throttle, like getting a whole bunch of like stuff to be able to do and shows and everything. And then it just sort of happened and it's like, oh, crap, well, now we have nothing.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I just feel bad for people like you who are like a little bit more ahead.
Yeah.
Who have like, you know, stuff. Have you didn't, I know you don't do them, but have, do people still give you like a lot of offers to do Zoom shows and stuff like that?
I don't get asked to do bringer shows anymore, so that's nice. For the most part, that's like, I feel like that's like, I did that for like, I did only like 2 bringer shows ever, and they were within my first year of comedy. And for me, it's like the same thing you said, but it's like, if you're 4 months in the comedy, how else are you going to get on a comedy club stage? You kind of just have to go with the scam a little bit. Like, as long as you know it's a scam.
Right.
You're like, I'm fully aware that this is a scam, but I have to get on that stage. So, like, I'm allowing them to fuck me a little bit.
Right.
And then
right,
let them fuck you for too long, because then that's all you're doing are bringer shows. So you have to, like...
Yeah. I saw that a lot. I saw that a lot with people who did bringer shows. The last time I was at that club in the radio show, there was one guy that just purely did them. And I was just like, dude, you're not going to... I knew he wasn't going to do well. And he bombed that night. I was like, you haven't been doing stand-up at all
for
this time period in between. He's like, no, I just do these bringer shows. Like, I just bring, you know, my friends and trying to get stage time. It's like, but you haven't like done any mics or anything. It's like, no, it's like, that makes no sense. It didn't compute with me at all. I was like, how can that happen? And then I was begging like to myself that he didn't do well, because if he did well, it would have just given him like the satisfaction. Look,
the thing
going
is like,
so I was like happy when he bombed. I was like, oh, thank God it didn't work. because that would have annoyed me if he was like, I don't do open mics, I only do bringers, and then he kills, and then I'd be like, shit.
You have
to. But I was happy.
You have to evolve. You have to, like, do other types of shows, you know? Like, you can't just do, like, it can be the same thing for an open mic if all you do are open mics. After a while, if you're not getting, like, booked on even a bar like, it's like you should probably, like, think about what you're doing, you know? Like, and things come slowly sometimes. Like, I'm just now starting to do some, like, higher, I don't want to say higher level, but I'm, like, moving up a little bit where it's, like, I'm in a better place than I was, like, a year or 2 years ago. So it's just, like, and the thing is with comedy, no one knows who the fuck I am, you know what I mean? So, like, to me, these little things that, like, these little evolutions or these little, like, steps I'm making don't mean anything to anybody else but me. But, like, it feels good if you're able to just, like, evolve a little bit and, like, go to, like, you know, just go up another step where you're like, oh, okay, like, at least I'm not just doing bringer shows or open mics, you know, so.
Right. That's the cool thing about, like, evolving in comedy is it always reminds me of when I did karate for 3 years, what was really cool was just, like, to see people just move at their own pace. So it's like, you know, and that's the same thing I see with comedy is I like seeing how, just give it time, everyone, if they're working hard enough, does evolve from a different place. Like, to me, it's just so... It's so cool to be able to just see everyone that I know, like, from years ago, keep getting better and doing different stuff. That's what's been really cool about doing this podcast is just all these people I've known for 6 years now. Just, like, I knew them when they were starting out and so different. And it's kind of cool to, like, watch people grow up. It's kind of like watching a TV show, really. It's like... It's like,
it's like Breaking Bad, where like the first season he has cancer, and then by season six, you're just like, oh, he just enjoys torturing people.
Right. So, did you watch the Patrice?
Yeah. I really yet? I dug it. I thought it was it's interesting because you watch it and you're like, wow, he would really, I know a lot of people say this, like, how would he do with today's like audiences or whatever, but like, I don't know. It's just like, he probably would have definitely had to like combat cancel culture or whatever you want to call it. He would definitely have had to, like, I think he would have survived because he would have made it funny, like making fun of that. So, like, I think he would have survived, but it's just interesting to think, like, how people would, like, because I think because he died, even the people that are, like, a part of, like, those kind of movements say he's great. But if he was alive, I think, they would hate him.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of ways, you know?
I think a lot of people do that to save, like, to just look good. Because, like, for him, he was, like, to me, what's so different to him from, like, just what I do with comedy is, what is so interesting to me is he's known for not needing people to laugh. Like, he could, you know, that was part of it for him. For me, I am always envious of comedians who are like that. And it's a little bit the same with, like, guys like Norman Howell, like, the same thing. It's like, to me, I'm so different. I need people to like me. I desperately need people to like me. I bet he would mock me, like, if he knew me, like, that I constantly need to be loved. Because, his opposite. And to me, I can't wrap my mind around having that type of,
that kind of, I guess, attitude or whatever, just because, like, I think doing comedy, you have to accept that there's going to be nights where people don't like you. You know what I mean? Like, You know, like, so, like, you have to be I feel like I try to be comfortable with that, where it's like, I might not get laughs on everything. It might not mean, it doesn't mean it's not funny, but, like, it's just, yeah, so I try to, right. Like, that's one thing where I'm like, I try to, like, have that kind of, like, same attitude he has, but at the same time with my comedy, I don't want to be, like, because I see this at every open mic. You can tell guys who are trying to be Patrice or Bill Burr, and you're like, you're never going to develop like yourself, you know? Like, so I try, like, when I tell people Patrice O'Neill, or like, if I tell people who like my heroes in comedy are, I want people to be like, you sound nothing like them.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was very surprising to me that you had those people, because, and it makes sense because, like, you know, it's a sense of humor of those people. I like a lot of those people too. It's so funny because, like, I was very I was guilty of, in the beginning, of sounding like, you know, when you sound like different comedians that you like when I was starting out, I sounded so much like this weird mix between like Louis and Marc Maron.
For me, I tried to have like a tough guy accent. Like, I think it was just uncomfortable. Like, that's why I would like talk like that. But like, I put on this weird, like, kind of like, I want to say New York, but it was like a weird, like, I was trying to talk like a soprano while doing like self-deprecating autism jokes. It's like the delivery doesn't work with the material. It's like, oh yeah, I'm fucking awkward. It's like, what? That doesn't. Well, like, are you gonna beat me with a baseball bat, or are you gonna cry about how you don't fit in? You gotta pick one or the other.
Right. Yeah, it's so interesting to see like how you evolve yourself, and to me that's always been so cool. Is like I have a friend of mine who's like me, who I've known for a long time now, and he's like gonna be doing his own album, and it's like,
yeah,
just so cool to see people be able to do that. Like, that's one of my biggest goals. Like, I guess I could ask you this next, like, do you have any like main like type of goals in comedy? Like, to me, I just want to be able to, like, my big thing is I just want to be able to come out with albums and just come out with stuff like yearly or whatever. And create a body work.
That's my main, have small goals. Like, I guess, like, right, a lot more where I was starting to, and it's, I don't know if it'll keep going this way, but because I'm doing a lot more feature sets now, I just want to have a 20 minutes that's completely like kills, where it's not, there's not like filler in it, where you're like, the first 15 right. minutes are good, but the last 3 minutes are garbage. Like, I want to have it be good all the way through. And as far as like long-term goals, I just want to make, if I can make a living doing comedy, that's great. I don't even need people to know who I am. I don't like want to be famous or anything. Like, that just comes with a whole set of problems, like, that, you know. Of course, if I become famous, that would be great. But I, like, for me, I don't want to say that because it sounds like weird. I just want to.
Yeah, to me, I always say, the word I always use is successful. Like, I always say, like, and there's a, I think that's very common nowadays with comedians. That's like, you know, you see that with Brian Regan. He's not, you know, a celebrity.
Yeah, that's.
But he's a comedian, and he's known for that. And it's the same thing with these guys like Dan St. Germain. Like, you know, they're known enough to be able to get work and do what they want to do. And I think that's, like, the sweet spot for me is, like, my thing is, like, if I could be, like, Gary Goldman level, that would be, like, it for me. Like, comedians and people just respect you enough, but you don't have to be super famous. One thing with Dan,
he does
famous.
A lot of, like, writing, you know? So, like, he's written for, like, tons of TV shows and stuff. TV and to me, like, I think that'd be cool, like, to be a writer where you're behind someone who's super successful. Like, they deal with that shit and they're just like creating stuff and getting paid to create stuff. Like, I think that would be like cool, you know, like to be a writer or something. Like, so, and I enjoy writing. So it's like, I would like, if I could somehow turn that into something, that'd be awesome. But like with stand up, you just don't know. Like, that's why, like, you know, I think it takes some comedians, it takes like, I don't know how many years before a big break even comes. So like, it's just a weird thing that doesn't have a time. Like, there's like no measurement of time where like it happens differently for everyone. Like, for every Pete Davidson, there's a Rodney Dangerfield where elderly when they got their shot. Oh, so it's like, that's the weird thing. I think with stand up, it also like is different from any other entertainment form because like, you could look like anybody and be successful in it. Like, you could be like completely hideous and like other entertainment forms, you kind of like have to have like a look that people are into, but for stand up, because it's about your personality and being funny, it doesn't matter what you look like. So like, that's like one thing about stand up that I think, honestly, unless you're good looking, then stand up is probably kind of difficult for people to get you to take. It's kind of weird. It's like the opposite of everything else in show business. Like, and
to me, I've always felt like with good looking comedians, there's always this like sort of ceiling of like, you can get to TV. Like, I can only think of a handful of people who are, you know, the one person who I think, you know, it's so interesting. Like, the one person who isn't a comedian who I think is like a funny person despite
being Ryan Reynolds is hilarious.
Is Ryan Reynolds. And it's like, he's like the anomaly. He's like the standout of like the person that's that.
Ryan
that
Reynolds,
doesn't,
and I don't
know
like if you feel this way. I feel like if he was around in the '70s, he'd be like, he would have been on Saturday Night Live as like a Chevy Chase kind of guy. Because he had, like, even if you
Wilder,
you're like, wow, this is a movie Chevy Chase would have been his first. So, definitely, like, I always try to, like, I kind of, like, respect good-looking comedians a little bit because I'm like, you're here doing, you must be more, I think they're more damaged than even ugly comedians because it's like, you look like that and you still have to do what I'm doing right here. Like there must, like, I feel like there's something in them that's even more broken than like an ugly comedian.
Yeah. And it doesn't surprise me, like with all those guys, like, I don't know, this is probably too mean to say, but it always feels like those are the guys that always end up being, like, accused of something. Like Chris D'Elia and all those guys, it's just like, they're attractive guys.
Oh,
why
do
they need to be
predatory
at all?
I don't know. Did you see his apology? It felt so weird. He's like...
Yeah, I did. I was listening to it, and then I was like, okay, this is going pretty well, a little braggy. And then the thing that, like, really, like, I want to talk about it on stage. I've completely forgotten to each time that I get on stage. But the thing that's funny to me is, like, him, like, not being able to tell between two ages of people. Like, I hate that excuse of, like, not being able to tell between, like, okay, I can understand that being, like, okay, if a girl is 17 to 22-ish, not knowing your age, but you can tell the difference between a 13-year-old and a 30-year-old. It's not that
hard. I got a lot of pussy.
Bragging.
So much pussy, it was a problem. And then he...
I know, they act like it's a disease.
Kept, like, fidgeting. Like, he was, like, playing with, like, his armpit every 6 seconds and, like, touching his stomach. And it's just like, dude, like... I don't know, like, if you know how this works, but, like, you're supposed to look, like, you know, like, A, don't brag as much, and B, quit touching yourself. Yeah, like...
Supposed to look
it just seemed like it's just such a weird... It was a weird thing where it was... not an apology at all. He didn't really go into what he was accused of. He just like kept like talking about slaying puss on the road. That's just like what it felt like to me. Like, let me tell you something. One time phone in Omaha and I got pussy. Like what? That's not like, what are you apologizing for?
It's like, oh, that would be like, I was thinking this would be like a great like bit, like, you know how Patton Oswalt has that bit about like how the like the Alcohol Anonymous, they have like the one for the eating. It's like you can never do that with the sex addiction stuff.
Yeah.
Because it would be like the most braggadocious type of anonymous.
Like one time, I fucked three girls and they all blew me. And then everyone's just like, that just sounds like an awesome life. I don't like, why are we here? Is this a real problem we have to fix? Right. Like, it sounds like we should just be all out there getting blown by three girls at the same time, if we can.
Yeah, that was funny. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm really happy that A, that you did this, and B, that it went by really well, because I always get worried that like I'm not interesting enough, or like I'm not asking the right questions.
I tried. You had a podcast for a little while, right? I did enjoy it. It wasn't for me.
Yeah, it's very hard. Like, to me, like, I just always have to like realize, like, is it a conversation or is it an interview? Like, that's the hard thing for me, is like, you know. And then I always try to like just keep at an hour, because like people, like my friends, they do podcasts for hours and hours, and for me it's like I just like to do 1 hour, keep it simple. And I don't like, like, it's interesting that you like Opie and Anthony and those type of guys, and I like them too, but I could never do that type of confrontational
to me stuff at all. One guy I always identified with on that show is Rich Voss, because he would just get completely shit on, and they would make fun of him for like being an idiot. And then, but he always took it so well, and he was able to give jokes back. So, like, to me, like, someone like that is like, I'm like, I feel like I'd be like a Rich Voss if I was on a show with like comedians, where it'd just be like I would say something the wrong way and then get completely shit on. And there's comics like that love busting my balls, and it's definitely like you have to be in the mindset for it. I definitely because I've been bullied most of my life, I have like a sense of humor about it, but like some comics, like if you even bust their balls a little bit, they hate it. Like, so I think it's just like, for me, if it's funny, like I feel like it makes me feel like kind of good when I'm getting my balls busted. If it's a good slam.
Oh yeah, me too. I love it. And to me, it's like, I always say this, it's like I've been made fun of my whole entire life, but by people who I didn't think were funny or entertaining at all. If you're going to be made fun of, it should be by the cream of the crop, the best people ever.
One comic I would love to make fun of me, and like, this is like an actual dream I have. I want like Colin Quinn to like shit on me, because he's got these observations he does that like he sees parts about somebody that like other people don't see, and he's able to like verbalize it in the best way. So like, it'd be interesting, like, to have him observe me and then, like, shit on things where I'm like, I've never told anyone that before, but he figured it out by my posture that I'm insecure about that.
Right. I just thought of something interesting that I want to tell you for the last part of this. It's so interesting. Is when you were mentioning Rich Voss and Opie and Anthony and those guys, did you ever see the they had Mike Birbiglia on with him? I felt so bad for him, because he didn't fit with that at all.
Kind of comedian. So it's
No, yeah. He was like trying to be, and they were being so hard on him.
Yeah, Mike was just, like, not able is, to, like, he was too nice. And the thing is, like, I love all kinds of comedy. Like, so, like, I love stuff that doesn't have to fit into that genre of comedy that I mainly like. Where it was interesting when a guy like Mike Birbiglia would, like, go on there a couple times, because you're like, he's a funny stand-up. Like, he's good at stand-up. But, like, that just shows that each style of comedy is different. Like, just because you're good at one kind of comedy doesn't mean you fit into another kind of comedy. So it's like, people that can do, like, be a good stand-up and then do, like, that kind of stuff, it's like, not everyone can do that. Some people are just good at, like, one specific thing. That's why, like, roast battles, there's some comedians that are so fucking good at roast battle, but their stand-up stinks. So it's just like, it's just because you're good at one thing doesn't necessarily mean you're good at the other. Even in comedy, there's different types of comedy people are good at.
Right. Well, the last thing I want to ask you, do you have any social media, like, besides
Facebook? Oh, yeah, I'm on Instagram. Do, like, Kurt Ryan, Instagram or anything? Comedy. Is my Instagram, and I'm not on Twitter. Like, I have a Twitter account, but I'm never on there, so to follow me would be a waste of time. But also on Facebook, I think I maxed out on friends, so I don't think anyone can really add me on there, but who knows, someone might delete me for something.
Right.
So if you ever do want to add me, I'm just Kurt Ryan on Facebook.
All right, well, thanks again so much for doing this, and
really no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Just thank you, man.
You too. Thanks. All right. Have a nice day.